Here we go. You know what I'm going to say? So brace yourselves and turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is, in fact, chapter 28 of the book of Bereshit, or Genesis. We're looking now at about the middle, I guess you'd say, of the life of Yaakov, at least the middle of the Torah portion concerning Yaakov. He has just basically really upset his brother Esau. And he's heading out, going to go up north. And as it turns out, it says, once he did this, by the way, where you're going, chapter 28, verse 10. And it's the first word here is Vayetze, and went Yaakov out from Beersheba, and he went towards Haran. And he lighted upon the place, tarried there all night because the sun was set. He took one of the stones of the place, and he put it under his head, and he lay down in that place to sleep. So he's using a stone for a pillow, which seems kind of tough. But bear in mind, too, that there is a there's a famous British, I'm tempted to say fable, but anyway, they believe that this is the stone that kings are coronated on. So for what it's worth. In any case, he took one of the stones, lay down, he went to sleep, and he dreamed. And beheld he a ladder set up upon the earth. The top of it reached unto Hashemayim, the heavens. And behold, he saw the angels of Elohim ascending and descending upon it. So you've heard the term Jacob's ladder. This is the story. And when I was a kid, of course, I've told this. I had high voltage supplies. And you've seen the all the monster movies. They always have this. It's called Jacob's ladder. It's a little ark. And it goes, and it climbs up. And, of course, that's the thing that is named for this portion. But in any case, he sees something, probably not exactly that, and it says, behold, Yahuwah stood beside him, and he said, Ani Yahuwah, the Elohim of Abraham your father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereon you lie, to you will I give it, along with your seed, and your seed shall be. Now notice, this is essentially the first time that we're seeing Yaakov getting firsthand the promises that he's no doubt heard all of his life. Your seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west, to the east, the north, and the south. And in you and in your seed shall all of the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with you, and I'll keep you wheresoever you go, and will bring you back into this land, for I will not leave you until I have done that which I have spoken to you of. So, Yaakov awakened out of his sleep, and he said, now, and this is kind of interesting. What we're seeing here is a remarkable change and kind of an eye-opening of Yaakov. He said, surely Yahuwah is in this place, and I knew it not. Now, he ended up here for a reason, and so the sages will say, wait a minute, no doubt about it, his granddad and his father probably told him about this place, and he knew the stories, but that's different than what he is fixing to say. Yada, of course, is the Hebrew word. Yada means first-hand experiential knowing, as in Adam knew he yada'd his wife, first-hand experientially. And Yaakov has heard the stories, now he is there and he sees it, and it resonates in a way like no story ever will. So, why the surprise, okay? He knew it, but now he yada's it. All right, now he was afraid, and he said, how full of awe is this place? This is none other than the house of Elohim, and this is the very gate of Hashemayim, the heavens. So Yaakov rose up early in the morning. He took that stone that he'd put under his head, and he set it up for a pillar. And he poured oil on the top of it, and he called the name of that place Bet El, right? House of El. But the name of the city was called Luz at first. And Yaakov vowed a vow. And notice this is an interesting one, too. In this vow, we will see that literally as he goes through it, it goes from third person to second person to first person in terms of his understanding of the relationship that he has. So it says, Yaakov vowed a vow. And he says, so here is Elohim in the third person. If Elohim will be with me and will keep me in the way that I go, this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then shall Yahuwah be Elohim, my El. And this stone, which I've set up for a pillar, shall be Elohim's house. And now notice it switches to second person and first person. And of all that you shall give me, I will surely give a tenth unto you. So there's the personal relationship that has changed in the same verse even. So it says, Yaakov went on his journey, came to the land of the children of the east, and he looked. Behold, here's a well out there in the field, and lo, three flocks of sheep are lying there by it. So the sheep are waiting, but they can't get to the water yet, because out of that well is where they water the flocks, and the stone upon the well's mouth was great. So we picture that there's this great big huge stone there, and normally it takes several men to roll this stone back. It's a great big stone. But we're going to see an impression here of young Yaakov's infatuation with the girl that he's going to meet. At least that seems to be part of the story. So there were all the flocks gathered, and he rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the sheep and put the stone back upon the well's mouth. Oh, I'm sorry. It's going to be he, but it's they at this point. So this is the place where they gathered the sheep. And essentially, normally, it took several folks. They rolled the stone back and put it back when they were done. But Yaakov says to them, my brethren, whence are you? They said, well, we're from Haran. And he said to them, do you know that fellow Laban, the son of Nahor? I said, oh, yeah, we know him. And he said to them, is it well with him? Yeah, sure is. It is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, here she comes with the sheep. And he said, lo, it's yet high day. It's not time for the cattle to be gathered together. So water the sheep and go feed them. So they said, well, no, we can't do that. Not till all the flocks are gathered together. And then they roll the stone back from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep. While he was still speaking with them, here comes Rachel with her father's sheep, because she's the one that tended them. Now it came to pass when Yaakov saw Rachel, daughter of Laban, his mother's brother. Daughter of Laban, his mother's brother. So this is his cousin, Rachel, Rachel, the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Yaakov went near, and he rolled that stone back from the well's mouth himself, and he watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And Yaakov, it says, kissed Rachel, and he lifted up his voice, and he wept. And, of course, the question is, why? He's just met this girl. Why is this happening? And, of course, as you might suspect, the Midrash offers no shortage of potential exclamations and explanations. One of which is maybe he's excited, maybe he sees things. I do tend to find that somewhat plausible, at least. Like in this moment when he sees her and he kisses her, which is it forward or is it just a formal courtesy? It's not really clear. But at this moment, it does seem like all of a sudden he gets a glimpse of a whole lot of things, and that's what's perhaps overwhelming. All right, so Yaakov told Rachel that he was, in fact, her father's brother, and that he was Rivka's son, and she ran and told her father. Now, it came to pass, then, when Laban heard the tidings of Yaakov, her sister's son, he ran out to meet him, and he embraced him and kissed him, brought him to his house, and he told Laban all these things. And Laban says to him, surely, you are my bone and my flesh. So he abode with him for the space of about a month. And at this point then Laban says to Yaakov, because you're my brother, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Isn't this nice of him? You need something for serving me. So tell me, what shall your wages be? Now it tells us Laban had two daughters. The oldest one's name was Leah. The name of the younger, we already know, is Rachel. And it says Leah's eyes were, well, some renderings say weak. I think a better rendering may be tender-eyed. She was tender-eyed. But in any case, Rachel was of beautiful form and fair to look upon. So we get the impression that Leah's maybe okay, but Rachel was probably more beautiful of the two. And it says Yaakov loved Rachel, and he said, I'll serve you 7 years for Rachel, Rachel, your younger daughter. Well, says Laban, it's better I give her to you than I should give her to some other man. So, yeah, hang in there, abide with me. So Yaakov served 7 years for Rachel. He seemed just like a few days to him because of the love that he had for her. And eventually, 7 years later, Yaakov says to Laban, give me my wife, for my days are filled, that I may go into her. Lechach, take her, consummate the marriage. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place. They made a big feast, and it came to pass in the morning. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you can picture a big feast. Here is lots of additional speculation. What is going on with poor Yaakov? Does he get drunk? Does he lose sight? I have had a number of impressions myself over the years, right? What makes the most sense here? I have a little bit of difficulty believing that he couldn't tell the difference, or that he didn't talk to her and hear her voice or something. Obviously, if Leah knows, she better not say anything rather than give herself away. She might not have. But still, in spite of however anxious he may have been, you do scratch your head just a little bit at this. But turns out he wakes up in the morning and shazam! It's not Rachel, it's Leah. And so he was. She was brought to him in her Rachel's place. And again, the other question: what's Rachel doing while this is happening? And he went in unto her. So he consummated the relationship with her. And then it says, Laban gave Zilpah, his handmaid, unto his daughter Leah, to be her handmaid. So it comes to pass in the morning, yep, there it is. Behold, it's Leah. And he, meaning Yaakov, now goes to Laban and says, what have you done to me? Didn't I serve you for Rachel? Why have you therefore beguiled me? And Laban says, now this is the one thing that the Midrash seems to agree on, and I can't help but think, yeah, there is an element of poignancy, measure for measure in here. Laban says, you know what? I'm not sure how it is back down south, but up here it's not right to give the younger before the firstborn. So it seems to be a chastening. Certainly, I think it would resonate with him for that reason. But Laban says, it's not done so in our place to give the younger before the first one. So, do this. Fulfill the week of this one. In other words, she's going to give her a one-week honeymoon, and then we'll give her the other one, too, for the service which you will, oh, yeah, what do you think? Let's have another 7 years, okay? So, Yaakov did so. He fulfilled her week, and he was given Rachel, his daughter, to wife. So, Laban gave Rachel, his daughter Bilhah, her handmaid, to be her handmaid. So now both of them have a handmaid. Rachel also, it says, then went in, and Yaakov consummated the relationship with her. And here is a key. Now, this is one of those things that we're going to see Scripture literally more than once notes, and it certainly seems to have a real impact on Yaakov's house. And we're going to see a number of indications of this, right, even in this Torah portion, and they percolate throughout time. It's not that he has more than one wife. It is not, well, it may be having to do with the way the relationship started, but one thing is for sure. For whatever reason, he shows favoritism, clear, undeniable, and it resonates. So it says here, he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with him yet another 7 years. So, Yahuwah saw that Leah was hated. Hated, that's a strong word. And he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Now, obviously, it's not like, even in spite of the fact that he loved Rachel more, that he didn't obviously spend some time with Leah, consummate the relationship every now and then, at least, every so often, because she's going to bear child after child after child for him. So it there was some consummating going on. So he opened her womb. Rachel remained barren. Leah conceived. So we're going to get now a series of young sons. First one, she bore a son. She called his name Reuben, because Yahuwah has looked upon my affliction. Now my husband will love me. You notice that each of the names here is going to have some kind of a relationship to, I don't feel like my husband loves me. He's not doing what it was that arguably by consummating the marriage he has made the promise to do. So, Yahuwah saw it. That's the Re'e part, Reuben. And now my husband will love me. All right, then she conceived again. So another year, arguably, give or take, and she bore a son, and she said, now, because Yahuwah has heard that I am hated, he has given me this son also, and Shema, right, Shimeon, so his name is called Simon or Simeon from Shema. She conceived yet again, and she bore yet another son. She says, now, this time, will my husband be joined unto me, because I have borne him three sons. So his name, based on this root word of join, is Levi. Then she conceived yet again. She bore a son, and she said, this time will I praise Yahuwah. So she called his name Yehuda. And at this point, she takes a break. She left off bearing, it says. So meanwhile, Rachel, she sees that Yaakov gave her no children. She didn't bear any for her husband. So Rachel envied her sister. She said unto Yaakov, give me children, or I'll just plain die. Yaakov's anger was kindled against Rachel, Rachel, and he said, look, am I in the stead of God, whom has withheld from you the fruit of your own womb? So she said, all right, look here. Here is my handmaid Bilhah. Go into her. Maybe she may bear upon my knees, and I might be built up through her. So it's not the first time we've seen this. Take my handmaid, see if maybe I can have kind of her as a surrogate, and I can have children be built up through her. So she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to be a wife. Yaakov went in unto her. And Bilhah, sure enough, she conceives. She bore Yaakov another son. And it's Rachel, in this case, now that is going to name the sons. So she says, Elohim has judged me, right? Judge, the root word there is Don. And he has also heard my voice and has given me a son. So she calls his name Dan, Don. And Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, conceived yet again. And this time she bears Jacob a second son. And Rachel says, with mighty wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister and have prevailed. So his name she called Naphtali. And then when Leah saw that she had left off for bearing, she hasn't had any, but Bilhah's now had several, she takes Zilpah, her handmaid, and gave her to Yaakov to be his fourth wife. And Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, then bore Jacob a son. And this time it's Leah that's going to do the naming. She says, fortune is come, or a troop. So she calls his name Gad. And Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, then bore Yaakov a second son. And Leah says, Asher, happy am I, for the daughters will call me happy. So she called his name happy, Asher, or Asher. And then Reuben went in the days of the wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field. Now, so obviously years are going by with each of these births that are going on. Now, there may be some overlap here, but certainly it's a number of years since the process starts. And here we have Reuben. Obviously, he's old enough. He's out doing helping with the wheat harvest. And he found some mandrakes in the field, and he brought them to his mother, Leah. And Rachel then says to her sister, Leah, give me, I pray you, of your son's mandrakes. Now, she says, is it a small matter? You've taken away my husband. You want my son's mandrakes, too? Well, says Rachel, therefore, he shall lie with you tonight in exchange for your son's mandrakes. So I've always thought this was kind of a funny story. You know, the mandrakes, the implication seems to be that this is some kind of an aphrodisiac or something that at least inspires fertility. And I don't know that I've ever heard any independent sources. I guess in this case, obviously something happened. But Rachel has basically said, you take him tonight. So here comes Yaakov in from the field in the evening. Leah goes out to meet him, and she says, all right, dude, you're mine. You must come into me, because I have hired you with my son's mandrake. So I don't know. You know, generally Scripture tends to be somewhat serious. I can't help but think maybe there's a little bit of levity in this. Like, come on, big guy, I got some mandrakes here. Says you're mine for tonight. But in any case, he does go with her, and indeed he lay with her that night. And this time it says Elohim hearkened unto Leah. So at least we know this is the reason why the story is in here. Because after a break, having all of this been accomplished, now Yah listens to, or hearkens, he hears her, and he does what it is that she's asking. She conceived, she bore Yaakov a fifth son. And now at this point she says, Elohim has given me my hire, because I gave my handmaid to my husband. And she called his name Issachar. To hire or to carry or take away. So, Leah conceived again. Now, we don't hear any more about mandrakes, right? But she's back into the fertility mode, it sounds like. So she conceives again. She bears yet a sixth son to Jacob. And she says, Elohim has endowed me with a good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me, because I've borne him six sons. She calls his name Zebulun. And after that, she finally bore a daughter. She called her name Dinah, number seven, the seventh child. Now, remembering Rachel, Elohim now at this point hearkens to her and opens her womb. She conceived, she bears a son, and she says, now this is an interesting turn of phrase, Elohim has taken away my reproach. And the Hebrew word there is interesting. It's he has taken away, he has gathered my reproach. Now, when I read this, I can't help but think that this is identical to the phrasing that we see in the prophecy in Isaiah 4, chapter 1, where we got all these women that have been basically acting wanton, mincing with their feet, their fancy jewelry, and all that kind of jazz. And then things get ugly. It sounds like a lot of men are dead. Seven women take a hold of one man, and they say, right, I'll wear my own clothing, take my own food, but let me be called by your name to do what? To take away my reproach. And the name? She calls him Asef, which is the root for increase, because Elohim has added to me another son. Or is it? Okay, the tense looks a little bit odd. It says Yahuwah add to me another son. So either she is thankful for this one, which I have no doubt about, but maybe she is foreseeing yet another son in the future. And of course, we know that's part of the story we'll get to next week. So it came to pass when Rachel had born Yosef, that now Jacob says to Laban, send me away. I need to go back to my own place, to my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have now served you. Let me go, for you know my service wherewith I have served you. So it's time to leave. Laban then says to him, look, now if I have found favor in your eyes, I have observed the signs, and Yahuwah has in fact blessed me for your sake. So he at least at this point, maybe finally, is giving a little bit of credit and saying, look, I know that it's for your sake that I'm being blessed by Yah. So, he asks, basically, tell me what you want. You name your own wages, and I'll give it to you. So the response that he's given, you know how I've served you, how your cattle have fared with me. In other words, things have been going pretty well. For it was a little which you had before I came, and it has increased abundantly, and Yahuwah has blessed me wheresoever I turned. So you didn't get this through your usual works here, and Laban evidently has a little bit of a reputation. We certainly know that from the attitude of Scripture, that he seems to be a kind of a, I remember the Green Acres guy named Mr. Haney, who's just a little bit of a shyster. That's kind of the picture that I have in my head of Laban anyway. But here is a guy who is recognizing, look, it's not because of my own works, my own efforts, but I'm doing pretty well now that Jacob's here. And he says, well, what shall I give you? So Yaakov says the following, you're not going to give me anything, but if you will do this thing for me, I will again feed your flock and take care of it. So you're not going to give it to me. I'm going to earn it, but here we go. I'll pass through all of your flock today and remove from there every speckled and spotted one and every dark one among the sheep. The spotted and the speckled among the goats, that shall be my hire. Now, so shall my righteousness witness against me hereafter. When you come to look over my hire that is before you, every one that you see that's not speckled and spotted among the goats or dark among the sheep, if it's found with me, you can count it as if it was stolen. So what he's saying is here, that's the deal, and if I'm not going to take any more than those. So you'll be able to come check on it. Laban says, behold, would it might be according to your word. All right, so we're okay here. He removed that day the he-goats that were streaked and spotted, all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white in it, and all the dark ones among the sheep, and he gave them into the hand of his son. So his son's going to take those. He's going to take care of Laban's. He set 3 days' journey between himself and Yaakov, and Yaakov then fed the rest of Laban's flocks. So Yaakov took rods of fresh poplar. Here's another one of these, I would call it, enigmatic portions of Scripture. I have yet to read a single explanation anywhere. I've heard some claims, well, it could be this or could be that, but none of them that basically said, hey, this person knows what's going on. No shortage of candidates have tried, but anyway, he gets some rods out of fresh poplar and of the almond and of the plane tree, and he peeled white streaks in them. So presumably they got some darker bark. He peels some white streaks in them, making the white appear which was in the rot. So he's peeling them through from the outside of the bark into the wood. Then he set the rods which he'd peeled over against the flocks in the gutters of the watering troughs when the flocks came to drink. So they conceived when they came to drink. So something is going on here with these poplar rods and the almond rods and so forth. The flocks conceived at the sight of the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked, speckled, and spotted. So it's like, you know, he puts the rods out there and Shazam, they're all coming out the same color. Well, at least the same pattern. Yaakov then separated the lambs. He set the faces of the flocks towards the streak, and all the dark in the flock of Laban. Put his own droves apart, and he did not put them unto Laban's flock. So he separates them. Comes to pass then, whensoever the stronger of the flock conceived, that Laban laid before the eyes of the flock in the gutters. In other words, he put the rods out, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the flock was not the good gene, the good bloodline, they were feeble, he didn't put them in. So it ended up that all the feebler ones were Laban's, and all the stronger ones were Yaakov's. And the man increased exceedingly, had large flocks, maid servants, and men servants, and camels and asses. So this process now goes on for a number of years, and these herds, of course, given good watering and land, will multiply dramatically. And they're getting some very good breeding, it sounds like. So he heard the words of Laban's son saying, "Whoa, look at this. Yaakov has taken away all that was our father's, all of that which was our father's. He's gotten all this wealth." So Yaakov then beheld the countenance of Laban, and sure enough, it was not toward him as it had been before. He's not happy. Yehuah then said to Yaakov, "Return, shuv," here's that root word, "shuv back to the land of your fathers and to your kin, and I will be with you." So Yaakov sent, he called Rachel and Leah into the field unto his flock. And he said to them, "I see your father's countenance. It's just not what it was as before. But Yahuwah, the God of my father, has been with me. So you know that with all my power, I have served your father. And your father has mocked me. And he's changed my wages 10 times now. And Elohim has suffered him not to be able to hurt me." So, for example, if he said, "The speckled shall be your wages," well, then all the flock bore speckled. And then if he changed his mind and he said, "The streaked shall be your wages," well, then all the flock bore streaked. So Elohim it is who has taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. Now it came to pass at the time that the flock conceived, I lifted up my eyes, and I saw in a dream, behold, the he-goats which leaped upon the flock, in other words, leaping upon the flock means they're making whoopee with the she-goats, they were all streaked and speckled and grizzled. And the Malach, the angel, a messenger of Elohim, said unto me in a dream, "Yaakov." And of course, his response, we all know it, right? Say it with me. "Hineni, here I am." He said that. Hineni. And then he said, "Lift up now your eyes and see. All the he-goats which leap upon the flock are streaked, speckled, and grizzled, for I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. Ani the El of Bet-El, where you made that pillar, where you vowed a vow unto me. So I am that El of Bethel. Now arise, get yourself out from this land, return now, shuv, to the land of your nativity." So here comes the rest of the deal. Now, having explained that, Rachel and Leah answered him, and they said unto him, "Is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not accustomed? Are we not accounted by him as strangers? For he sold us, and he has quite devoured our price." It's an interesting way to put it. "For all the riches which Elohim has taken away from our father, that is ours and our children." So it says basically, look, we're your wives now. And these are your children. So do then whatsoever Elohim has said to you to do. So they're on board. Do what Elohim has said to you to do. So Yaakov rose up, he set his sons and his wives on the camels, and he carried away all of his cattle and all of his substance which he had gathered, the cattle of his getting, which he had gathered in Padan Aram, to go back to Yitzhak, his father, into the land of Canaan. Now Laban, it said, was out, he was shearing the sheep. And Rachel, for reasons that don't make, well, we're not told, but it says Rachel, Rachel, stole the teraphim, these little fake gods, little idols, that were her father's. And again, no shortage of explanations. I've yet to hear I can think of, anyway, let's just say it's not satisfying. Why would she do that? It's obviously not a good plan. And it says, so Yaakov outwitted, he stole away from Laban the Aramean, and that he told him not that he had fled. So he leaves without saying goodbye. So he fled with all that he had. He rose up, he passed over the river, and he set his face toward the mountain of Gilead. And it was told to Laban on the third day, uh-oh, Yaakov has gone. He's taken everything. So he took his brethren with him, and he pursued after him for 7 days' journey. And he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. And it says, then Elohim came to Laban, the Aramean, in a dream of the night. And he said to him, take heed yourself that you do not speak to Jacob, either good nor bad. So it's a warning. Laban then comes up with Jacob. Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountain, and Laban with his brethren had pitched in the mountain of Gilead. And Laban, when he caught up with him, says, what have you done that you have outwitted me and carried away my daughters as though captives of the sword? It's like you've kidnapped them, in other words. Where, therefore, did you flee secretly, and why, and steal away and outwit me? And you didn't tell me, so that I might have sent you away with mirth, with a good party, songs, tabret, and harp. And you didn't even allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now, you have done foolishly here. He says, it's in the power of my hand to do you hurt. But Elohim, the Elohim of your fathers, spoke to me last night, and he said, take heed to yourself that you do not speak to Jacob, either good or bad. So he took that lesson to heart. And now that you're surely gone because you long for your father's house, why have you also stolen my gods? Elohi, my little fake teraphim. And Yaakov answered, and he said to Laban, because I was afraid. For I thought to myself, lest you should take my daughters away from me, your daughters away from me by force. My wives, your daughters, by force. With whomsoever you find those gods, though, those fake, your teraphim, he shall not live. I will contend that is a mistake. We're going to see why. He has prophesied, and it's a negative one. Whoever you find those with shall not live. Before our brethren, discern what is yours with me and take it to you. Because it says here, it reminds us, Yaakov had no idea. He did not know that it's Rachel that had stolen them. So Laban went into Jacob's tent. He went into Leah's tent, the tent of the two maidservants. He didn't find them. Then he was out of Leah's tent, and he entered into Rachel's tent. Now Rachel, in fact, had taken the teraphim. We knew that. And she'd put them in the saddle of the camel, and she's sitting on them. So Laban felt about the tent, but he couldn't find them. Then she says to her father, let not my lord be angry. I can't rise up before you, because the manner of women is upon me. Now notice, she is sitting upon the teraphim. They're underneath the saddle. And essentially what she's saying is, you're not going to reach under here, I know. Because, of course, this is the claim that this is the time of her uncleanness, and that would not be something that even Laban would do. So he searched. He didn't find the teraphim. Meanwhile, Yaakov was really upset. He was wroth. He strove with Laban. And Yaakov answered, and he said to Laban, what is it that is my trespass? What is my sin that you've so hotly pursued after me? Whereas now you felt all about or all around my stuff. You didn't find any of your household stuff, did you? If you did, set it here. Show me. Show my brethren and your brethren that they may judge betwixt us two. Yep, you got a problem? You lay it out. What'd you find? These 20 years have I been with you. Your ewes and your she-goats have not cast their young. The rams of your flocks have I not eaten? In other words, I was a good steward of all that you had me take care of. That which was torn of beast, I didn't bring it to you. He could have, right? And he could have been basically given a pass on those things. I, in fact, bore the loss of it. Out of my hand did you require, whether it was stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was. In the day, the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, my sleep fled from my eyes. So I was a loyal servant for all of these decades. 20 years have I been in your house. I serve you 14 years for your two daughters, 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages some 10 times. Unless the Elohim of my father, the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac, had been on my side, surely by now you'd have sent me away empty-handed. Elohim has seen my affliction, the labor of my hands, and he gave judgment last night. So Laban answered, and he said to Yaakov. Now this one I can't help but kind of picture, and I'll do it with the way I would read it, a little bit of petulance. He says to Yaakov, those daughters, they're my daughters. Those children, they're my children. The flocks, my flocks. And all that you see is mine, mine, mine. And what can I do this day for these my daughters or for their children whom they have borne? So come on, man. Let's make a covenant between me and you. Let it be for a witness between me and you. So Yaakov took a stone, he set it up for a pillar. And he said unto his brethren, gather stones. They did. They took stones, they made a heap, and they ate there by that heap. And Laban called it Yegar Sahadutha, but Yaakov called it Gal Eid, which is interesting, the heap of witness, Gal Eid. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and you this day, so that's why they called it the name Gal Eid. And Mitzpah too, for he said, Yahuwah watch between me and you when we are absent from one another. So, if you shall afflict my daughters, take any other wives beside my daughters, so you got four, don't take any more, no man being with us, Elohim is a witness between me and you. Laban says to Yaakov, behold this heap, and behold the pillar, which I've set up between me and you. This heap shall be the witness, the pillar will be the witness, that I won't pass over this heap in your direction towards you, that you won't pass over this heap unto me for harm. Now notice, he doesn't say not at all, he just says for harm. The Elohim of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge betwixt us. And Yaakov swore by the fear of his father Yitzhak. And it says, then Yaakov offered a sacrifice in the mountain. He called his brethren to eat bread, and they did. They ate the bread. They tarried all night in the mountain. So we're almost to the end of the Torah portion. And we're going to see essentially the parting, and that will conclude the portion for this week. This is the first couple of verses of chapter 32. Early in the morning, Laban rose up. He kissed his sons and his daughters, and he blessed them. And Laban departed. And this is an interesting phrase. Usually when you see this word in the Torah phrased this way, it means not only did he go back home physically, he went back to the way he was spiritually too. So it says, Laban departed, and he returned unto his place. Yeah, back to idolatry, back to a less than righteous life, perhaps. Yaakov went on his way. The angels of Elohim met him. And Yaakov said when he saw them, this is the camp of El. And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And it really is from two camps. Now with that, the Torah portion ends.